From the Sunshine State, this is Tampa Bay's Tan Talk.
It's time for FLA Law, brought to you by the personal injury attorneys of Peronic, Caulfield, Averill, and Noyes. This hour will be informative, along with taking your questions and comments. Now, here are your hosts for today's show.
Good evening. This is attorney Matthew Noyes, and I am one of the attorneys at the law firm of Peronic, Caulfield, Averill, and Noyes, the oldest personal injury law firm in Tampa Bay. We have been serving the injured since 1955. Guy Peronic started our law firm back on downtown Clearwater in the old fire station, and since then we have been proud to serve and fight for those who are injured in car accidents, trip and falls, slip and falls, work accidents, and even Social Security disability cases since 1955. We are here as a community effort to be available to answer questions that you may have regarding the law. We used to do a TV show called FLA Law on the television, but we are now on the radio, and so we are here live from 5 until 6. So if you have a question regarding the law, give us a call at 441-3000, and we'll be able to tackle your question. But we're also on Facebook. If you don't want to hear your voice on the radio, you can always just go to the firm's Facebook page, which is Peronic, Caulfield, Averill, and Noyes Injury Lawyers. And we are Facebook Live right now. And if you get on there, you'll see that I'm not here by myself, but I'm here with my good friend and my law partner, Lori Robinson. Lori, thanks for coming again today.
It's always great to come on the air and kind of share a little bit of our knowledge about personal injury law.
Yeah, Lori has been a wonderful co-host for not just me, but also Jacqueline. I think maybe Lori's been on the air more episodes than me or Jacqueline.
That's right, because I cover both, right?
Yeah, so she ends up covering
not more, though, because you guys have got more.
But Lori and I have been working together, gosh, for 25 years.
Yeah, something in that ballpark.
And you've been with the firm for 25 years. Almost 26,
right,
I guess,
right,
yes.
It's coming into the 26th year.
And so Lori is here also to answer questions that you may have regarding the law. And we're not going to narrow it down just to our areas of law. We are open to any discussions that you have about the law or the legal process. Again, this is a community service for you all. We strongly believe in giving back to the community that has made us so successful for so long. And so this is your opportunity to ask a lawyer a question. So give us a call at 441-3000. So Lori, why don't you, you've been with the firm for 25 years. You've seen a lot of things change and grow. And why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about the firm itself?
Well, I, as you mentioned, I came to the firm about 25 years ago. Actually, we'll be 26 in October.
Yeah. She was only 15 years old when
yes,
she came.
Yes, no, and I realized somebody, I was saying that, and they said, you know, maybe you want to say like 5 or 10. You know, I was like, oh my goodness. I had had a lot of experience when I grew up, as you know, here in Clearwater, and then after law school, I practiced in West Palm Beach for about 10 years as a public defender, and then I went into personal injury doing much of similar work to what we do here, and then I came back to help my mother in 1992 and worked over in Tampa for several years, and then had the opportunity to come to work for Peronic. At that time it was Peronic and Carroll, because we had Guy Peronic, the founding partner, and then, as you know, he had brought in Bob Carroll. I guess Bob must have come into the firm maybe the early 60s or something like that.
I think it was pretty close to that.
Pretty close to that. And you know, what I loved, because I am a hometown girl here, is I knew from my mother, she had known Bob Carroll's mother very well. Stephanie Carroll was a wonderful hairstylist. My mother had her hair styled in the 60s by Stephanie Carroll, who was just as bubbly and delightful as Bob, her son, is. And so Mom felt very connected. So when I actually was thinking about exploring other options and became aware that there might be a position at Parenick and Carroll at our firm, my mother was absolutely thrilled, because of that connection. And so what I love about our firm is it's actually kind of rare with law firms, is that we really have a very long-established foundation here.
Sure.
So it's, of course, the firm being founded so many years ago, but we've been able to provide very high-quality personal injury law service to our Tampa Bay area. And that, of course, was Guy Parenick's dream. He created this specialty firm before they did that. Now, of course, everything is so specialized. I mean, the law is incredibly specialized. Obviously, medicine, everything has kind of gone that way. But I found in my own personal legal career, I love the litigation aspect. I love debate. And if you're going to do that in the law, there's a relatively few number of areas that you can actually do it and actually get into the courtroom occasionally. And personal injury in civil practice is really the major one. So I was thrilled to come on board. And then actually in my early days, I was fortunate. There were so many trials going on that I was actually able to complete the requirements for board certification as a civil trial lawyer.
Board certification. Why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about that? Are all
sure.
attorneys board certified?
No, actually, because of the development of specialties over a period of time, the bar has recognized different fields of law, and the area that would apply to us is the civil trial area. And they developed requirements to basically essentially establish and document your specialty in a particular area. So to become board certified in a civil trial, a lawyer has to have been in practice at least 5 years and has to demonstrate experience, you have to have a number of jury trials that you've handled on your own, quite a number of them, and then you take a test. And all of this is in addition to the regular examination that all lawyers take to be certified to practice law in the state of Florida. So, small percentage of lawyers go on to become certified in their specialty. And so I was really very, very happy to have a bunch of trials with Mark and Brian and you, and to be able to create the background so I would be able to get that certification, which was like, I think it was 2001, which turns out that was a long time ago. So I've been renewed quite often, because you renew it every 5 years. You
right,
know?
And there's only, I think it's only 2% of lawyers in Florida are
right.
board certified civil trial
attorneys.
I've
heard
that
statistic,
right.
And I think it is a small percentage of the, I mean, maybe there are 100,000 lawyers or something in Florida, maybe more.
There's
now.
There's a lot, yeah.
Yeah, it's like, it's hard to imagine.
Well, and what's great is we have two.
That's
you
right.
You know, we have you, and Brian Caulfield is also a board certified
yes.
civil trial attorney.
Yeah.
So that just shows a little different that our firm is compared to other firms.
Well, it really kind of reflects the great experience, because all of the lawyers, yourself, Mark, all very experienced. Yeah. But adding that additional qualification of the certification is just another thing that says that if you have a problem, a legal problem that involves the area of personal injury, we're very, very equipped to help you.
Right. And that's Lori Robinson. I'm Matt Noyce, and we are both attorneys at Parenick, Caulfield, Averill, and Noyce, the longest established personal injury law firm in Tampa Bay. Lori spent all day talking about doing Social Security
yes,
hearings.
Yes, oh my goodness, it was a marathon.
So we're going to shift.
Three hearings,
We're going to shift from Social Security disability tonight. And we're really going to talk about, something that's important to so many people and the majority of our clients, and that's car accidents.
Yes.
One of the most asked questions that we receive from clients is, what does it mean, or what can I expect? Tell me the process. And so I thought it'd be good to take the next hour to really
sure.
talk through the steps of what a person injured in a car accident would go through if mm-hmm. they had a claim with the insurance company. So we'll start from the way beginning, and we'll end up at the way end, hopefully, if we have enough time.
Okay.
But Listeners, please interrupt us with any questions that you have. In the meantime, again, the number is 727-441-3000 or on our Facebook page as well at Perenik Caulfield, Averill & Noyce, Injury Lawyers. Perenik is P-E-R-E-N-I-C-H. All right, so the life cycle, I feel like I'm still in my son's preparation for his IB test.
My son yes, is, there will not be a test after after our lecture.
Thank goodness. My son is a senior, as you know, Lori. Jacob is a senior at Clearwater Central Catholic High School, and they're getting ready for their IBs. And so one of his classes is marine science. And so there's a lot of life cycles that they have about. So I have this labeled as life cycle of a car accident case. And typically what happens first is there's a crash.
Right.
You know, somebody's not paying attention. Somebody is negligent, and they cause a crash. What are some things that somebody should do right after a crash?
Sure. And so I guess, you know, the one thing we realize anybody living in our community knows, unfortunately, that you're like a sitting duck. You know, we have so many people driving now, and there's so many ways that motor vehicle accidents can happen.
That's so true.
You know, just a little bit of inattention, and all of a sudden, boom, you're rear-ended. Or, you know, somebody turns right in front of you as you try to make a left-hand turn. Or, you know, there's certain things that tend to be kind of repeat. So probably the first thing that happens, if you haven't been through an accident, you know, the first thing is it's just so shocking. It just really is jarring for most people. And you know, the first thing, of course, is, you know, you're going to want to be sure your vehicle is in a safe location.
I noticed that yesterday? I think yesterday. Mm-hmm. There was a rear end crash right on Bel Air and US 19.
Okay.
It was on Bel Air, but at the intersection of US 19. And they stayed in the turn lane.
Ah.
You know, and my son was like, "Dad, we know you got to pull over." But I felt like I should have told them, you know, move over to the car lot next to it. But no, the law requires them to pull over, in fact, after a crash.
Sure. And you want to get out of the way if you can safely.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, it depends on your scenarios, because you can be in a situation. You know, I've shared previously that a couple of years ago I had a rear end collision on Hillsborough in Tampa, and it was like I'm stopped at a railroad track, and then another vehicle stopped behind me, and then another vehicle behind that vehicle doesn't realize that we're stopped and slams into the back of it, pushes the vehicle behind me into my little sports car, you know, and really mashing up my rear end. Well, getting out of the car, you know, it's like that wasn't going to be, you weren't going to be able to move those
right.
vehicles right away. But when the police arrived, the first thing they were talking about is we need to get these cars off to a parking lot nearby.
Sure.
And, you know, I found myself just sort of kind of like in shock. So
right,
it's like,
that's what happens.
Yeah, you know. So you're going to look at that first level of safety and security. The next thing, and obviously being sure that everybody is all right if you have passengers, things of that nature, but you really want to try to essentially document what's there at the scene.
Right.
Because one thing that is a great benefit of our time with the cell phone, you know, everybody can take a picture of the location, the damage to the vehicles, the positioning. So in a situation like that, you know, you can document quickly what the situation is, get the vehicle, if you're able to, off to a safe location. Call the police,
police.
If they're, you know, that's number one. You know, so you have someone responding to the accident scene, and then they will begin the process of gathering information, the police will, when they arrive, regarding identity of
yeah.
persons, vehicles, insurance, that sort of thing.
Information exchange, so to speak.
Right.
Now, if there's no road rage issues and everybody's
right.
calm, you can even do that before the police arrive.
Yes.
And like you were saying, take photographs of the driver's license of the other drivers. Take photographs
good,
of
yeah.
their insurance card. It's very important to get a copy of their insurance card as well.
Right.
If you can take just a picture of it.
You know, there can be many situations where the police may not even, depending on the, if it's, you know, quite a bit of damage in the accident, then, you know, the police are going to arrive there most likely. But you could have a situation where it's, there's quite a delay, or maybe maybe there's a lot going on and they don't come.
You right, know, there's so, hours and hours. And,
right.
And if everybody's able to drive away, mm-hmm. then you may just want to exchange the information.
Right. So we always like, and it's always protection for the individual, to have a police response if possible. But even in the absence of that, you want to be sure to get that exchange of information, the key things being obviously the insurance and then the identity of the other driver. And like you say, great idea to just take a picture of things. That's like, you know, if I'm in a parking lot now, I think, I may not remember where I am. I'll take a picture.
You know? I do that with hotel rooms all the
yes.
time now. I take a picture
yeah.
of the hotel room number. So.
You know,
no,
yeah.
I think that's important because
right.
really the investigation really starts at the accident scene.
Yes.
I think it's just that important to really start taking the photos. And you may not need them. You know, the
right.
next day, everything may be fine. You're not having any problems. And you may not need it, but it's better to have it because
yes.
you can't recreate what you didn't take a photo of.
No, and there can be questions later on. And
right.
you know, as we have experienced so many times with clients, and when you're in an accident, the adrenaline is flowing. You don't necessarily recognize... And, you know, hopefully you won't have ongoing problems, but it's just not that uncommon for things to kind of blow up over several hours to an evening, and all of a sudden you thought it was something minor, wasn't going to be an issue, and then your whole body is on fire, aching, whatever, you know. So
yeah, I think they say it takes 36 hours to 48 hours to get that adrenaline calmed down enough. And it's just the chaos, too. Okay, now what am I supposed to do? I was on my way to pick up the kids. Now who's
right.
going to pick up the kids? What am I going to do about dinner now? And how
yes.
am I going to get to work tomorrow? And all
right.
those things.
All sorts of things.
So all those things are a mechanism to block pain so you mm-hmm. can try to deal with those things.
Right. And you just it's just the way the human mind and body works. You just
right.
don't necessarily... realize that. So you're going to gather the information at the scene. Maybe your vehicle has to be towed. Maybe it doesn't. If you can drive away, obviously that's always nice. But once you clear the scene, and I guess before I say that, I should say that, you know, in situations where someone, very often we'll find there aren't witnesses. You know, people will drive on, they don't, but sometimes people will
sometimes, yeah.
stop and make sure that the people know that they saw what happened. And so if there is a situation where there is somebody that observed the accident, then it is a good idea to get that information. Now, there can be situations that don't really matter, but I remember I was actually at Belcher and Gulf to Bay, I was stopped, and yeah, it was like there was a vehicle in front of me that hit the vehicle ahead of me, or maybe no, they were behind me. That's what it was, and that the vehicle did not the middle vehicle did not act. It might have tapped me. I think it did, but it didn't actually do any damage. But it was something that, you know, we pulled into the Publix parking lot,
right,
and then the other vehicle behind me had a lot of damage to the rear because the, yeah. So I made sure that it was a young lady, that she had my information, because if there was any issue where they needed a witness,
right.
you know, then I could have been a witness. It's pretty straightforward, so probably not, but, you
well,
know.
Well, we always think it's straightforward until
oh, yes.
somebody says something totally different.
Right.
Oh, your car was moving at the time. I couldn't have been moving. I was stopped for 2 minutes
right.
or whatever
yeah.
it may have been.
Or, you know, something like if the, you know, what we find often, so these rear-end collisions, you know, obviously most times the person that rear-ends a vehicle is going to be at fault. There's even a presumption of that in the law. But there could be circumstances where if a person comes to a very abrupt, short stop that nobody had any reason to expect, there could be a circumstance where that there could be an argument about whether the for example, an example I just gave, say that the young driver behind me had just all of a sudden come to a very sharp stop, and I there was nothing sharp. I mean, I rolled to a normal stop. There was nothing like that. And then the other driver wanted to use that as an excuse to say, well, you know, I didn't know there was no reason for them to stop so suddenly. So there are situations where, like you say, they're not necessarily as straightforward as we would think they are when we're right there and we see what happened.
Right.
But
that's why witnesses are so important. You know, because that's the next part of the investigation. Mm-hmm. First of all, you have to report it to your insurance company.
Yes.
So you get home and you report it to your insurance company. What do you tell our listeners about reporting or talking to the at-fault driver's insurance company?
Well, it really is advisable to think about whether you should secure legal counsel at that point. You normally, I mean, it kind of depends, but if there's a situation where there's any possibility, really, that you've got injury, you really should be consulting an attorney at that point.
Why is that? Why do they need an attorney before they talk to the insurance company if there's a possibility of an injury?
Because the insurance company for the at-fault driver is not your friend.
You're not in good hands.
You know?
No matter how nice they talk
right.
to you, their job
right.
is to get your testimony that you weren't hurt.
Yes, and really, they're going to minimize anything that occurred. I mean, they're an insurance company representing the other party, and of course, the way that they make money as an insurance company is to hopefully on their end, they don't want to be paying out a lot of money on claims. So,
right.
so you really, and it's again, you know, we're talking about this, you know, how you deal with an accident, because most people really don't have much experience with it.
No.
You know, some people will have the misfortune of being in a few accidents close enough in time that they think, oh my goodness, I've been through this. But most people, maybe you had an accident 10 years ago, but it hasn't happened in a way that you're really that familiar with it. So very common to more or less let your guard down. You don't know who you're talking to or what you're talking to them about. You may think you have no problems. You may be mostly focused on your car in that early stage, which is rather common, you know?
Right.
And not thinking at all about whether there's going to be some physical repercussion that you might have to deal with. But that insurance adjuster is thinking about that and loving to be able to get you to, you know, they're going to want to take a recorded statement from you, and they want to get documentation of your limited injuries, if any,
right.
at that stage. And that's the kind of thing we deal with as attorneys, obviously. If you have a lawyer, then you're going to get some advice on what the situation looks like. And we, obviously, if we're representing people, we'll be a participant and a protective participant in any interviews that would occur. Because you really do not want to be talking to the opposing insurance company with, you know, without any representation. Now, the minor exception to that would be that if you are dealing totally with property damage, we will often, if there's not an issue, allow our clients to go ahead and deal with just that limited issue.
Correct.
But it, you know, it can't be about anything but that limited issue. And so, but to evaluate all that, you need to be talking first, getting a little legal input on that, and as you know, again, if you haven't been through this process, but you can talk to a personal injury attorney without charge, and we will even represent you if we think it's a case we might be able to help you on under a contingency system that means you'll never owe anything unless there's a financial recovery. So there's really no downside to getting some advice if you're in an accident.
Well, of course, I would agree.
Yeah, that's right.
I'm a personal injury attorney.
I persuaded you.
but once the injured person decides to hire an attorney, that's the second phase of the investigation that started at the accident mm-hmm. scene. After they are retained, the attorney jumps in, and they start the investigation. One of the most important things to investigate is insurance coverage.
Yes.
Every single Tuesday evening from 5 until 6 o'clock, we always want to talk about uninsured motorist coverage. And so this is an opportunity to bring in uninsured motorist coverage. Mm-hmm. But insurance coverage is so important to look into. What insurance coverages do we look at or do we need to look for
right.
when there's a crash involved?
Yeah, so often, you're involved in a crash, and maybe the other driver says, oh, I'm so sorry, but I have full coverage. And
I cringe at those words.
Right, because it sounds so good. It shows you, you know, marketing. So insurance company is selling you, quote, full coverage. You feel pretty good about that. But actually all that means is the minimum required by law to be able to drive a vehicle in the state of Florida. And it's like $10,000 for property damage, your own personal PIP insurance, which is medical insurance that covers injury to you up to $10,000. So if that's what the person has, then they don't have the most important insurance coverage. Really, fundamentally, we'll talk about the uninsured motorist in conjunction with that, but it's liability coverage.
So, bodily injury liability coverage.
Right. So you cause an accident, and your insurance company, you'll have if you have a bodily injury liability policy, say it has $50,000 in coverage, then that amount is available to compensate the person that you injured. Yeah. So finding out what the situation is regarding insurance coverage means finding out, does that driver that caused the accident have bodily injury liability coverage? And if they do, how much of it do they have? Because we know a lot of times people will have very limited. They might have $10,000. That doesn't do anything today,
right,
hardly.
Not anymore. And now it's not just the driver, though, right? That's part of what we do is we look to see what other coverage may be available.
Right.
And that would be the owner of the vehicle.
Yes, there can be those situations where perhaps the vehicle is owned by somebody else and it's being driven with permission. So there could be other coverages available there.
If the driver is working at the time,
right.
That's another avenue of insurance that we attorneys need to look for.
Yes, because if it's if it happens while the person is driving during the course of their work, then their employer, if they're the owner of that vehicle, they would have to cover that.
And that's why the investigation is so important. The first 30 days after a crash, I think, are some of the most important days, is because what happens in those 30 days can impact the next 30 years.
Oh, my goodness, it sure can. Yes.
And that includes medical. They need to see the doctor.
Mm-hmm.
The law, in fact, gives them a requirement of when they need to see the doctor, right?
Yes, it's really over a period of time, the insurance companies have succeeded in really limiting what they call the personal injury protection coverage. So now you've got to get into a doctor within 15 days of the accident.
Actually, it's 14 days. 14 days of the accident.
Yeah.
If it's 15, it's too late. They don't have to pay the PIP benefits.
See, look at those dirty insurance companies. But,
you paid those premiums forever and ever and ever.
And but the lesson of that is really, you really want to go right away.
Right, you got to get checked out.
Because the thing that happens is, again, the further off you are from the actual accident itself, the more you open up arguments about, well, was this from the accident or is this just some other cause, basically, so that's very key. So you don't want to wait 15 days, you don't want to wait 14 days,
no,
really.
You
want to get in within the week, certainly.
How many
as soon
times
as possible.
Do we hear the insurance company, insurance adjuster say, well, they waited 2 days before they went to the doctor?
Yeah.
And say,
yeah.
Okay.
Which is normal.
If they went right away, you'd say that they went right away,
right.
And that they're trying to force a claim.
And
so
most people are going to kind of want to be sure, am I going to be okay, basically. Yeah, but it is wise to go as soon as you can and certainly, within a few days for sure.
Yes. Yeah. And so we have the investigation going, and part of the investigation is also the medical treatment. It's not us doing the investigation, but it's the doctor doing the investigation of what injuries were caused from this crash. Why is it important to have continuous treatment after a crash?
Well, if you're going to make a claim based on the pain that you're experiencing and the limitations you're experiencing, there has to be a record of evidence that you're having those problems. And of course, what happens, and I would certainly be guilty of this, I don't like to go to the doctor.
You and me both.
Yeah, right.
That's why we're friends.
Yeah, So you might well, you certainly can testify yourself to what you're experiencing, but the insurance company loves it when there's a gap in care.
Yes.
Because they can say, well, if it was all that bad, why weren't you going to the doctor?
Right.
And that's a pretty strong argument for them, even though there can be many situations where, obviously, we have clients, that may not even get within that 14-day period. I mean, what happens, unfortunately, though, is the way the law is structured. So say you don't think you really have a problem, you don't want to go to the doctor, and even though you've heard us say you really should go, and you don't go for 30 days. Well, that doesn't mean you can't bring a claim.
Correct.
You still may be able to bring a claim. Your PIP, your auto insurance for medical payments will not cover, because the insurance companies have succeeded in limiting it like that. So if it's not, if you don't get that, get in there in that 14-day period, but you still have a claim. But you know, you have created a real argument on the other side, because now they're going to say, well, 30 days. Wow. I mean, it could be something else that happened.
Exactly. And, you know, and even that's in the gap of treatment. If mm-hmm. if you are treating, then you have a gap, and then you start treating again.
Right.
We often hear, well, gosh, what happened during those 2 weeks or 3 weeks that you didn't treat? Did,
right.
did you pick up something at work? Did you hurt yourself? What happened? And so that's why it's so important to treat and document. We have to document so much of the injuries, of the lost wages. We have to support the lost wage claim with medical
right.
documentation.
And that's something,
as well.
You know, the PIP coverage, they'll pay 60% up to $10,000. Again, you're going to have had to get that policy in effect by seeing a doctor within the 14 days. But yeah, and it's not normal for regular people to think in terms of documentation
no.
like this, which is why legal advice is important
right.
And input, because there's just no way for anybody to appreciate the importance of this. And automobile accidents can really disrupt a person's life, the injuries that very often flow from that. So you're entitled to compensation if somebody caused the accident, they were negligent. Makes sense, frankly, to get a little input. It's just a very, very specialized area that you're not going to know about unless you've gone through it before.
Right, and it's like I always tell the clients, it's like putting a puzzle together. Every piece of you need every piece of the puzzle to fully understand what the picture of the puzzle is.
Yes.
And if you have missing medical records, if you have not the proper documentation for lost wages, you can't show the clear picture to the insurance company of what impact this crash has had on
right.
them.
Right.
You know, and so they're treating with their doctors, and they're getting better, they reach this plateau where they're just not getting any better. And that's the magical point of maximum medical improvement, or MMI.
Mm-hmm.
And at MMI is when we can request the final report from the doctor, because they know what the prognosis is going to be. It doesn't mean they don't need any more treatment. They reach that plateau, and if they stop treating, they may fall off that plateau. But at least they have enough information to be able to opine what the future holds for this
right.
person. And so we get the final report, and we gather up all those other pieces, including what I think is very important. Sometimes attorneys just forget about this, and it's called we call it the lifestyle form.
Mm-hmm.
Insurance companies always want the case to be a matter of medical bills, future medical bills, lost wages, future
right.
Future lost wages. They forget that it's a personal injury.
Yes.
That you gotta understand what impact it has on that person,
mm-hmm.
on their lifestyle, on the things they used to be able to enjoy to do. I mean, I had somebody a whole family who just bought year passes to Disney World.
Oh, gosh.
And a week later, they get in a crash, and the husband and the wife and the four kids can't go to Disney. You know, and that's a financial
right.
damage.
Particularly there.
Yes, particularly there. But it's also an emotional, and it's an impact on the
yes.
family. You know, they can't do the family time. And so the lifestyle form is so important.
I think so. And because, you know, what we're always trying to do is hopefully put things together in a way that you can get the case resolved without having to go all the way through a jury trial. You know, but yeah, and very few cases have to do that. But these lifestyle things, those are the things that while the insurance company may not value it in and of itself, what they do value is they see, these lawyers are going to be able to make a pretty persuasive presentation on behalf of these people because of all of these personal details that show and kind of bring to life what the impact of the accident was.
Exactly. I think that's so important. And so that's part of our settlement package. We said, and it's not a settlement letter. Some people call it settlement letters or demand letters, but I consider them more settlement packages
mm-hmm.
because you're giving the insurance company all those puzzle pieces. We're not telling them to put the puzzle together, because we know what will happen. They'll cram those pieces in any way they want to try to make it look the way they want it to look. we have the puzzle already made for them. Mm-hmm. We have all the pieces together, and we submit the settlement package. And we submit a settlement proposal, a dollar amount, because eventually we have to talk money. Because
right.
that's what a personal injury case is. It eventually turns into a dollar amount. It's compensation. We wish we could have a judicial system that takes the pain away. We don't have that kind of system.
Yeah, I think every client we've represented, almost everyone, I'd say everyone, if you could roll back time and just avoid whatever it was that led to that accident, that would always be preferable. But we have to be thankful that we do have a monetary compensation system, because at least there is a way to achieve some compensation for economic losses, but also for those intangible losses too. Which this is not something that exists in this. We get a lot of criticism about our tort system. We call it the tort system, the judicial system that deals with personal injuries, but. There's no place like it in the world. I mean, as imperfect as it is, it does produce at least some help for people. We've been doing this so long, and it's absolutely devastating the impact that these accidents can have on people.
It really can be. And they may look normal to their neighbor,
mm-hmm.
but the impact and the pain that they have behind closed doors, is unimaginable. Well, again, we've been talking. I am Matthew Noyce, and I'm one of the attorneys at the law firm of Perenick, Caulfield, Averill, and Noyce, and you are listening to FLA Law on the radio. We are here every Tuesday from 5 until 6. Lori Robinson is my law partner and my co-host tonight, and we're here really giving the life cycle of the car accident. We talked about what happens in the car accident. We talked about all the way up to the time that we submit our settlement package to the insurance company. They get their package. They say, "Oh, okay, we're going to tender that money to you." Is that what they do, Lori?
Well, sometimes.
Sometimes,
but not usually. Not usually.
Most times, that begins the negotiation phase of the case, so to speak.
Right.
And we have to go back and forth with the insurance adjuster. They minimize all the puzzle pieces or interpret the puzzle pieces differently.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to just go back and forth with offers and demands to see if we can reach a settlement without filing a lawsuit. But that's not all we do during that period of time, because it's important also, and we talked about it in the beginning, it's important to supplement the puzzle pieces with the medical records. It's not going to be 3 days a week. It's not going to be even 2 days a week, probably, because you're at that MMI. But it should be documentation of the ongoing problems.
And that's something a lot of times people will really be challenged by, that because you've treated with a doctor, you get to a certain point, and they say, well, this is kind of the most we can do, but if you come back as needed. And a lot of times people will feel like, I don't know if I really want to be going to the doctor all the time.
Right.
But there are two things involved here. One is that if you have experienced, if you're still having issues, which the people I'm thinking about are still having issues, then the truth is, to get the best result and outcome, both for you in your case, but also honestly in your physical well-being, it is good to follow up to the doctors on a somewhat regular basis. It doesn't have to be as frequent as it was in the earlier stages. And so it's good for the person. But in terms of the case or the claim, it's essential, because otherwise you get into that situation we talked about earlier about a gap in treatment. And the real reason is you've reached a certain point that there's only so much the doctors can do, and they've pretty much done it. And so it's normal to say, okay, I've got a life to live. But the insurance company says, "Oh, I guess you're all right."
We always say, treat for your body, don't
Absolutely.
Treat for your case. We have never been a firm that said, "Hey, let's send you to that doctor, that doctor, that doctor, mm-hmm. that doctor to build up a case for you." No, we want you to see the right doctors to get the right treatment, to document your injuries, so you're protected into the future.
Yes.
And so when we say don't treat for the case, but treat for your body, we've seen what happens when people go without treatment,
mm-hmm.
and then their body they become that new normal. And that new normal is a new normal of limitations and restrictions.
Right.
That sometimes the client doesn't even appreciate that they're having. It takes a family member or someone saying, why do you walk with that limp? How come we don't go to dinner or dancing anymore that we used to be able to do? It's just the new normal. And so that's why that medical treatment is so important. But, okay, so we're doing settlement negotiations. We're going back and forth, and the insurance company just says, listen, this is the dollar amount we're going to pay. Take it or leave it. And it's not something that we can – if it's something we can take, okay, the case is resolved. And then we work on the whole disbursement and the medical – gathering all the medical bills and such. But if it's a number that we just can't take, it under-evaluates the true magnitude of the pain and the suffering and the damages that the person went through. What's the next step?
Right. So you know, very often, you know, it's always going to be the client, the injured person's decision, but obviously you hire lawyers, we're going to give you our input and our advice. And so if it doesn't seem like the insurance company's made a reasonable offer, given our experience and knowledge about, you know, what would be reasonable, then the next step is we would recommend that we file a lawsuit. And again, we would explain all of that to the client because, of course, it's always their decision. But ultimately, many times it is necessary to file a lawsuit in order to ultimately get the best outcome in your particular situation. And so that involves exactly that. You file a lawsuit. Everything's done electronically these days in the courthouse, and then from that point forward, the lawsuit has to get served on the actual person that caused the accident, the defendant, and the injured party is the plaintiff in a civil matter like this. And so once that person gets, the defendant gets served with the lawsuit, they turn the lawsuit over to their insurance company, who hires them a lawyer, which is a part of all insurance. That's why you have insurance. If, God forbid, you've caused an accident, you know, you call your insurance company and they take care of it for you. That's what the insurance is for. And
okay, so if the insurance company is taking care of it for them, is the lawsuit client versus the insurance company?
Absolutely not, because except in one area we'll talk about in a minute, but now the law is very strong that you can't even mention insurance in a civil matter, a personal injury matter. So if we go all the way to a jury trial, cannot say a word about insurance. So you sue the person that caused the accident, but they will be defended by lawyers hired by the insurance company.
And we have seen in situations where the at-fault driver may want to get the case resolved, feels bad for causing the crash, but the insurance company is the one who ultimately decides the settlement values and the settlement offers.
Yes.
And so I think that's an injustice, because if you're bringing a claim against the person, then the person should have at least a say in what should be compensated for their own negligence.
Sure. You know, but for the insurance company, of course, it's just business.
Right.
And they're looking at, you know, how they can pay as little as possible, which is why, unfortunately, it is sometimes necessary for these things to take a little longer, because they do require going through the legal judicial system.
Yeah, so the jury never knows that there's insurance involved unless
it's a situation where there was not enough insurance coverage, or let's say even the defendant didn't have insurance, that bodily injury liability that we talked about, and you, the injured party, were wise enough to have uninsured motorist coverage. And in that situation, you actually may end up in a situation where you're suing your own insurance company if they've not reasonably valued the claim. Yeah, and in that scenario, that's different. Then obviously you have to sue your insurance company for, in effect, a breach of contract if they have not properly paid damages in a situation where you have uninsured motorist coverage and an uninsured motorist or underinsured motorist caused the accident. So say you have $100,000 in uninsured motorist coverage, and say the person that caused the accident have nothing. and you bring a claim against your company because you have that coverage, and it's for that very purpose. So if right. that ends up in a lawsuit, then there would be, in that situation, then the jury knows that there's an insurance company that's being sued, but they don't know anything about the amount of the policy or any of those particulars.
I was just going to ask you that.
Yeah, they don't know about that. They'll have to, based on the evidence they hear and the jury instructions the court gives them, they would decide what they felt the damages were, and then the insurance company would have to pay those damages within the policy limit.
Right. So we filed the lawsuit, and then, you know, people watch TV a lot. You file the lawsuit, and within the hour, you're already at a jury trial.
There you go. Not.
Not really. There's a discovery phase.
Yes.
Can you tell our listeners a little bit what happens? What documents occur right. during the discovery
so
phase and such?
There are initial questions, they call them interrogatories, that are exchanged between the plaintiff, which would be the injured party, and then the defense, essentially the insurance company for the driver that caused the accident. And there'll be depositions, which are sworn statements taken under oath that are done. They used to be done in court reporters' offices. Now, because of what happened through the COVID experience, there has been somewhat of a positive in that we do a lot of depositions now via Zoom. Every so often there's somebody that wants to do it live,
right.
but most times it's by Zoom. And so that's a part of the process. Thinking back on our early discussion about the importance of witnesses and things like that, we would have any witness that was identified, we would have had an investigator go out and take a statement. We would have had that information. And so as you go through the discovery process, those witnesses would be identified in the discovery. And sometimes, usually as you get closer to a possible trial, depositions would be taken of them. But for the most part, the typical situation is going to be the defendant deposition to explore, you know, how the accident happened and the fault issues. And then the defendant will certainly want to hear from the plaintiff and what their problems are and that sort of thing.
Right. So they have the written interrogatories. We also can do a request to produce, and that we can produce documents.
Yes.
Both sides get to do that.
Right.
And oftentimes our clients say, well, why do they want my prior medical records? Well, they're entitled to their prior medical records under either the request to produce or non-party
yes,
production.
Yes, and those are very important. People don't initially understand that a lot of times.
Right.
But your medical condition will be very important in what your actual damages are. Yeah. And so that's a situation. We don't ever run away from that because, you know, most people of any age are going to have some prior medical history. That doesn't mean that if you are injured and that your pain is exacerbated or made worse or you have additional new problems, all of those are things that are very legitimate to
sure.
bring as a part of a
sure.
personal injury action.
It's another puzzle piece
yes.
that comes into play. So we do the discovery phase, and everybody's had their deposition. They have all the documents that they need. The next step is mediation. Briefly, can you tell our listeners a little bit what mediation is? Is it beneficial? Is it required?
Yes, it is always required before a case could be, even most instances, set for trial, but you have to have mediation. And it's very beneficial. It's a settlement conference, and it just brings all the parties together with a mediator who is a lawyer or judge that has gotten certified as a mediator, and they facilitate settlement discussions. And so I would always say, I mean, I always think of it as information gathering. We gather information about their settlement.
I steal
position.
Her words once in a while about the information
and,
gathering.
And yours is, we're here to maximize your recovery, which is true. That's
right.
what it's about. So it is very good, and actually a very high percentage of cases would settle in mediation.
Or at least close after mediation.
Yes, very,
right.
very close to it. And then a rather small percentage of cases will actually end up having to be scheduled for a trial at some point.
Right. What I like about the mediation, if we do it right, mm-hmm. and if they do it right, you kind of know what the trial is going to be like.
Yes.
We are all the type of attorneys that just lay our cards on the table. This is the good, bad, and the ugly of the case.
Right.
This is what's we're gonna have to talk about at trial. Let's talk about it at mediation.
Mm-hmm.
I wish I could say that the insurance companies are often that prepared. They often
yeah.
are not, but it does give us an insight of how they see the case, so we can.
Right. I mean, I think it's good for both sides. Yeah. You kind of get, you know, sort of the short version of how they're seeing the case, and they get ours as well. And very helpful to the client to get a little bit closer appreciation for what's involved, because it is a very foreign process.
Right.
And, you know, we try very hard to make it a little friendlier, but it's definitely a foreign process for people.
And so we say it's a snapshot of what the trial may be. Mm-hmm. Mediation is usually done in a few hours, if not in maybe a day, but in a few hours. What about trial?
Trials typically for a typical personal injury matter are going to be 3 to 5 days.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. I mean that's the simplest case, a case that's so that's just a simple, if there is such a thing, simple auto case. You know that's typically what's going to happen because there's so many parts to it. That this part is like on TV. That's why we like it.
That's true. But they're done in an hour. We're still going.
Yeah, that's true. So you get the little snippet. But I mean, but you have the jury selection. And then, you know, and that's going to take several hours. And the attorneys do their opening statements. And then you begin calling the witnesses. And there's direct examination and cross-examination. And then there are all kinds of legal arguments that the lawyers make with the judge.
Closing arguments. You know. And there's those jury instructions as well. And then finally, there's the verdict.
Yes, right.
And the verdict really tells both parties what they thought about each party's or each side's thoughts of the case. Typically, in a jury trial, one party's happy, one party's mad, or upset, or disappointed. At a mediation, though, the good thing about mediation, I think we were taught that mediation is wonderful if both parties walk away happy. I don't think that's true. For an effective mediation, both parties have to walk away a little upset. We think we took less than we thought that we deserved, and they think they paid more than they deserved.
Yeah, I think that's how really both sides end up feeling, like in the circumstance you got the best result you could. But it's never like we're never going to get what we would get if we had a jury that was all of our family and friends, you know, really. So, and likewise, the defense, they're not going to get, obviously we're not going to cave to them. So, so I think it's, media. I do think most people are ultimately, through the process of mediation, if it settles, I think most people do feel like they're relieved and they're glad. But, that's not to say there aren't sometimes, and we like those times a lot, when you feel like you did even better than you thought you might have, you know. But for most, like you're saying, you know, it's a settlement. I mean, so in each party gives a little to avoid the uncertainty and expense of actually having to go through a jury trial.
Right. Now, we just spent about 58 minutes talking about the life cycle of the case.
Yeah.
One of the questions we hear a lot, especially in the beginning, is how long is this going to take?
Wow, right.
And so really, I can tell from the pre-litigation stage, mm-hmm. really it takes about 6 to 9 months of active medical treatment before we can submit that settlement demand.
Yes.
And then it takes about 4 months of negotiations to see if we can get the case settled or go into litigation.
Mm-hmm.
If it goes into litigation, about how long does it take?
Then, you know, you're really looking at a year to 18 months, something that they are trying to compress it. I have not actually seen the result of that yet.
Yeah, we haven't seen that compression yet.
Yeah, but I mean, they're trying to put timelines. But there's just, it's a longer process for sure once you get into litigation. And it's probably going to take you a year to, and if you push it, maybe you could get to mediation within 9 months or so of filing suit, but it's hard.
So if any of our listeners have questions about the life cycle of an auto case, mm-hmm. an auto accident case, give us a call. Our office, well, we're not here from 5 to 6 on Tuesdays. Our office is right on Belcher and Sunset Point, but we have offices throughout Tampa Bay. The firm is Perrinick, Caulfield, Averill, and Noyce. We are the oldest personal injury law firm. Our website is voiceoftheinjured.com, but our telephone number is, Lori?
727-796-8282.
And we are always available to answer any questions that you have. whether it's on Tuesdays or during the week at all. We really appreciate you listening for this past hour. Lori, thank you very much. I think it was very informative. I always like to end the show with encouraging our listeners to drive safely and to watch out for those who don't. Take care.